It's cheese distribution day at the Salvation Army in Champaign. Over the last 4 years, this scene has been repeated almost every month as volunteers have passed out government surplus cheese and butter to thousands of people. A family with 3 to 5 members can get a 5-pound brick of cheese and a pound of butter. If you have 6 or more in your family, you get an additional pound of butter. It might not seem to be enough to make a difference in anyone's diet, but when you say that to Salvation Army volunteers like Charlene Neal, you'll hear stories that say otherwise.
A couple months ago, we were supposed to stay open until like 3:30 or 4, I can't remember the time, but we closed early. And I went outside and there was a man standing out there, and he didn't look very well-dressed. In other words, you could tell he was a very poor man. And he said, gee, you know, you closed early. I really need the cheese because, you know, I don't have a job. I'm very poor. And he said, I really need the cheese. And he looked real sad. And I felt very sorry for him, so I came back in. And I said to Pauline, please, I said, that poor fellow out there, he really looks like he could use it. And I got him one, and I took it outside to him. And he left, and I seen him walking down the street. And well, he told me when he left, he said, thank you so, so much. And he was really appreciative. I mean, you could really tell it. And I'm sure he wasn't fibbing either.
They walk down the same streets, ride the same buses, and shop in the same stores when they can. It's just one big crowd out there, mixing the haves with the have-nots, and it's easy to get lost in a crowd. Maybe that's the way most of them prefer it to be. Poor people have their pride like everyone else, and being poor doesn't allow you much to be proud of. For most of us, the poor exist only as numbers, and the trap of poverty is just a vague notion.
It's something, I don't think really anybody, unless they're there, or work closely with it as we do, can really truly understand the plight of the poor and all of the things that are involved in it, you know.
Emma Johnson is a budget counselor with Family Service of Champaign County.
I mean, most people say, oh, poor, oh, don't have food, oh, well, oh, your clothing not too good, but it's just very complicated. It's very involved, you see.
This program cannot say everything there is to say about poverty and those conditions associated with it, hunger and homelessness. What it does offer is a glimpse into the lives of some people who are having a tough time making it on all fronts, and of the way in which one community has tried to answer their needs. We hope, too, that it will give some of these invisible people a voice, and you some of their story. The federal government has two major ways of helping people in need of food. There is the giveaway of surplus commodities, and there is the food stamp program. The food stamp program is complicated, and we will not deal with it at length here, but one point needs to be made. Critics of federal programs like food stamps say people in need just don't get enough. In November of 1983, the Food Research and Action Center in Washington, D.C., released the results of a survey of emergency food centers across the country. The report, titled Still Hungry, stated that of those people coming in for food, almost two-thirds received food stamps. However, almost three-quarters of those people said their stamps were gone by the second or third week of the month. Joyce King works in the Champaign office of the Department of Public Aid. She supervises those caseworkers who deal with people who get food stamps but receive no other forms of aid. She says she's not surprised that food stamps aren't taking people through an entire month. She says one must remember what food stamps were intended to do.
I would say that most of the people that receive food stamps in this county don't receive the full allotment for that family size because they do have some income. And really all the food stamp program can do is try to bring a person up to the basic poverty line level to help them survive from month to month. It's by no means an amount that a person can really live in luxury off of.
It seems clear then that the government cannot make certain that no one goes hungry in this country, although we might think that it should. The gap between what is provided and what is needed must be filled by people. And in Champaign-Urbana and many other cities, people have risen to the challenge, starting organizations like Empty Tomb. Empty Tomb was founded more than 10 years ago on the belief that it was the duty of all Christians to serve those less well-off than they. They have many programs providing food, clothing, furniture, and home maintenance to those in need. Empty Tomb also coordinates the efforts of a number of churches who collect food and take it to those who need it. Ann Shanholzer is the Empty Tomb Food Coordinator.
The Empty Tomb Ministry is to challenge the churches to reach out to the poor. And so what we want to do is just provide opportunities for those people to do that. But what we're doing is we have food available on a walk-in basis, and then we have about 40 congregations in the county who actually do food deliveries. They have their own food pantries at their individual churches and do the deliveries, you know, out of those food pantries. So what we have available here on a walk-in basis is dried beans all of the time, powdered milk at least once a month, and then we have some canned goods, which a few churches do collect and bring here for us to disperse, or individuals will bring it by. But we have a limited amount of food here.
The need for food has held steady over the last few years. There's been a slight increase, although Shanholzer says the number of churches making deliveries has nearly doubled in the last 2 years. In February of 1982, Empty Tomb coordinated delivery of food to 99 families or individuals. In February of 83, there were 101 deliveries. In February of this year, there were 129.
But I have seen, I think, an increasing number of calls coming in, and understand from Central Information and Referral, where we get a lot of calls, that they are getting a lot of calls and turning people down because we just don't have the resources to help them.
Calls come in from all over Champaign-Urbana, from community agencies and from individuals who've heard about Empty Tomb and who need food. From there, the word goes out to a local church. And Shanholzer says some are interested in helping their neighbors. Most, she says, are willing to go anywhere.
Okay, I'm taking groceries for a week to a family with 6 children whose ages range from 15 months to 13 years, and their mother.
Boy, that's a tall order. That's an awful lot of kids.
The maximum delivery that we usually give is 1 week, because our call is to meet emergency needs.
Carol Dirks, a retired dietitian, says she's probably made 4 or 5 trips like this one over the past 5 years. She and other members of her church, St. Matthew's Lutheran in Urbana, made 15 deliveries in only the first 3 months of 1984. They served 56 people.
You can visit with them or not. You know, it's like a lot of them, we live in different worlds, and they're probably as uncomfortable with me as I am with them. We get to visit. You can visit as much as you want. A lot of them, it's just leave the food, that's it. It's the whole gamut of experiences. I've felt almost threatened by some deliveries, and I have just felt loved at other deliveries. So there's the whole gamut. Most of them are extremely grateful, are just really up a tree because they got shorted, you know, that month. Some of them say, oh, this is only short term, and I'll you know, help the next one type of thing. And I'm glad to hear them say that. You know, when life gets better for them, then they'll be helpful. There's just the whole range of emotions for them too. It must be very difficult to ask for food. I mean, to be so far down in your life that you gotta ask for food. I think that would be hard.
We pulled up to a house in a quiet residential neighborhood in East Urbana, one that seemed neither very rich nor very poor. A tricycle sat in the middle of the front yard, which was more bare dirt than grass. The house was gray and would have benefited greatly from a new coat of paint. We were welcomed by a young woman who helped us carry in the food, bags of fresh produce Carol had bought on the way, and canned goods from the church food pantry. Then we sat down to talk. We agreed that I wouldn't give her name. This conversation took place in early April. She said she was 36. She lived there with her 4 children, ages 13, 12, 11, and 7. They were all in school when we came to the house. Sleeping nearby was the child of a niece, a little over a year old. The house was very sparsely furnished, with a sofa and a few chairs. There was a black and white television and pictures of her children hanging on the walls. I asked her how she wished that things might be different.
Well, I wished I could get a good job. I wish that. And if I could, then I think I would have all the help I would need.
She said she'd been out of work for a year. The only income she had was the $495 check she received monthly from public aid. She said she received $200 in food stamps. Her rent was $375. She had called Empty Tomb because she'd used her food stamps for the month. She had a week to go before she could get more, and there was no food in the house. I asked her how she managed to make it.
I get a public aid check and food stamps. And so since my power bill is so high, my extra money to go on grocery, I have to go on the power bill. So we don't have much for grocery right now.
In the past, if the food stamps haven't lasted long enough, what have you done?
Well, like I say, I have a big family here, and we help each other. You know, I have two sisters get food stamps, so we share, you know. So that's how we get through from each other.
She explained she'd been living in this house only for a couple of months. She had moved there, she said, even though the rent was high, because it was a better neighborhood, and she was worried that her older children were getting into too much trouble at her old place.
Because I was living in a neighborhood where kids stole and stole and stole. And my kids was right in the middle of it. So I had to, like, get them out. So over here is more expensive, but it's a nice neighborhood.
Is it sometimes hard to talk with them about what they don't have and what they'd like to have?
Yeah, mainly my son. Now, he stole, too, because kids around him, he used to play with. Well, they got mom and dad, and they work. And he think he should have what the other little boys have. So it's kind of hard when I tell him he can't get this because I don't have the money for it. So it just makes me feel bad because I can't give him the things he won't need.
Paying the rent and buying the groceries aren't her only problems. You heard her talk earlier about her power bill. She told me that she owed the power company $1,500 going back to December.
That I have no idea how I'm going to pay it.
Have you been in touch with the power company? I mean,
yes. So I have to pay them $154 a month plus their current bill for them to keep it on. They give me 6 months to do that.
Are you afraid at all that somehow it might come down to them shutting things off?
Mm-hmm. Because I told her when I signed the agreement, I didn't know how I was going to pay that much. But I had to sign it.
This woman is not alone in her problems with the power company. According to the Central Illinois Consumer Energy Council, some 35,000 customers of Illinois Power Company were facing shutoffs at the end of April. IP customers in Vermilion County alone owed an unprecedented $450,000 on past due bills. And you mustn't think that because it's now June and temperatures are in the 80s, that people's troubles with the power company are over.
You're talking about not bills this month, but it has to work themselves out.
Emma Johnson works as a budget counselor with Family Service of Champaign County.
Summertime, these individuals that come in here for food are still going to be paying on these winter bills. You see, and still coming in here for food because that money, because they're, what's hanging over their head is the threat of being turned off. So you will pay the power bill like in April 1st when they begin to do all of the cutting off. And so what does that mean? You come back to Family Service for some more help on food because you got to pay that. And so where are the places? And we're one of those places.
Family Service of Champaign County operates a referral service that works to direct people to agencies in the community that can help with their particular problems. They also do some advocacy work, trying to help people about to be evicted or who face disconnection by the power company. Irene Metzger heads the Central Information and Referral Services. She says this year they saw a significant increase in the number of people who needed food as they faced the choice between heating and eating.
Halfway into our fiscal year last year, we had something like 1,300 persons served. As of the half-year mark this year, it was 1,651, something like that. And we figured that as about a 25-26% gain in that. And as I say, I think a lot of it can be attributed to the long winter, and the other to the exhaustion of some of the other resources around town so that people come to us.
The direct help that Family Service can give is limited. Usually they try to refer people in need to Empty Tomb. But if a person calls the referral service and says they have no food at all, they can get a small package from the Family Service food pantry to see them through a couple of days. Irene Metzger gave me a tour of the pantry, which is really just a locked room in the basement of their building. She said she was a little nervous having me talk about it on the radio because a short time before, someone had broken in and stolen a lot of food.
These products over here in these large boxes you can see are meats, and they are USDA, their government surplus. There, of course, with everything, with all this comes forms. And at first the forms were rather simple. We simply signed our names and said that all the items were given away and all the people were at poverty level. Now they want all the people to sign off, so it makes it more complicated. It's really extremely annoying to me that every single person that comes in, and we have a couple of hundred a month, will have to sign off, and we will have to say this is government surplus and this is a regulation. I mean, it makes people feel even worse when they have to say, yes, I need this. But, you know, that's what they want in order for us to get this food.
Right.
So it looks like you have canned meat, you have some fruit,
yes,
looks
you see
like
how
dry milk.
Question. Yes, dried milk. And when we've also started something new, because when you get government surplus milk, that is the smallest. That is a 4-pound box. Now, that's a lot of milk, okay? And there are an awful lot of people who don't know what to do with it. So one of the first questions we ask is, have you ever used dried milk? Do you care to try it? And then what we've done is we've gotten together a little collection of recipes of what you do with dried milk. You can use dried milk to make hot chocolate mix or other things. You can put it in puddings. You can put it in any number of things. So I asked all the staff people to make a little collection, and what we do is we enclose it with the milk to make sure it's used. I cannot have precious food like that sitting on somebody's shelf who doesn't basically know what to do with it. The other question was those very large cans of vegetables and fruits. When they first became available, we thought, my gosh, what are we going to do with those great big cans? But we tried it and found that large families are delighted with that. I mean, that's dessert or vegetables for a couple of days, several days. Mm-hmm. So they're fine. We give them only to large families. The crackers, which are not government surplus, the crackers, as I said, were very nice for street people with a small can of tuna. We have two different sizes of tuna. Today we were able to get the small cans. Usually we have only these large government surplus tunas. They're very large cans. But the small ones, it's a meal of sorts for people who have no place to go.
Would you wish that you could stock more things, give out more things, or are you just kind of...
Well, I'll tell you something. At the beginning of this terrible winter, we had food drives. We had a number of food drives, and we were the recipient of a number of cans and things. We always wanted cans because, as you can see, we have no refrigerator. And I loved the small cans because it meant that you could give somebody a couple cans of soup or something like that. Now, as you see here, this is a totally different pantry. This is large cans, large volumes of something. Okay, so that if I had my druthers, I'd have two different kinds here. I'd have something for the guys that are living on the street, the people who are living on $144 a month and run out of money. I mean, you give them peaches like that, they don't know what to do with them. So I guess, I mean, the tuna and the crackers. But if I had small cans of vegetables or small cans of soup, things like that, I would have a little storehouse of something to give out to a small family or to an unattached male or an unattached female.
That's Irene Metzger of Family Service of Champaign County. Many of the problems faced by the poor stem from the fact they are living on fixed incomes in a world where the cost of everything they need keeps going up. Even just maintaining can be difficult. That can be especially true of senior citizens who may face growing medical bills on top of everything else.
I should go to a doctor every month, but, you know, and see, you know, see if that would help me a lot. Because I have to both to walk with a cane, but I don't, you know, like I should, but I don't all the time, you know, because I have a cane. The doctor wants me to.
Virginia O'Neill is 51. She lives alone in a small house. One of the first things you wonder to yourself as you walk up to her place is just how it manages to stay standing. You probably wouldn't say hers was a poor neighborhood, although there are two abandoned shells of homes sitting next to hers. The front door is blocked off on her home, so you have to go around to a side door, and that one opens from the kitchen. She greets you with a pleasant smile, this lady that is as small and frail as the house she lives in. Her hearing was damaged when she was 11, and she's worn a hearing aid ever since, even so she asked me to repeat many of my questions. This past winter, she slipped on a patch of wet floor in a supermarket, and she broke her hip. A trip to the hospital for surgery followed, and now she has several thousand dollars in medical bills.
Well, one bill was $3,000 and something for the hospital, and then my ambulance bill is quite a bit. And where I get that kind of money, I don't know.
She was away for a time last winter visiting a son who lives in North Carolina. While she was gone, her pipes froze and her water had to be shut off. She still has no running water in her house. Her brother carries water in plastic jugs. Her furnace had to be shut off because gas was leaking into the house, and now she heats her home with her oven. She has no telephone. She had it taken out because she couldn't afford the bill. She receives about $250 in public aid and $48 a month in food stamps.
I just don't go by no place, you know. Only to church and home, you know. I love to go to church. I just love that all the time. I go to church all the time.
Do you ever have problems running out of food? Do you
no,
have enough to...
I kind of manage.
To make
but
out?
See, the church been helping me some. You know, they helped me a while back, you know, before I got my food stamp. The church did. I just try to manage, that's all. But it's hard. Sometimes it's hard. I go to my sister if I need help with things, you know, different things. That way my sister, I go to her and tell her. And then she helped me, you know, settle problems out and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I love to live by myself if I can.
You like the feeling of being on your own?
Yes,
and
that's right. My brother comes around and helps me, you know, fix things and different things that way. He carries water for me all the time. My brother does. You know, he brings the water in for me because my bathroom isn't working now. My water froze last year when I was in North Carolina, and so I don't have to carry water right now.
Mm-hmm. So... There's no water coming into the house?
No. There's no water coming in right now. And then I don't have no heating system right now. My stove, see, my gas stove over there right now, it's on it, but it's low. It's turned low right now. The oven, that's what they get heat from right now. I get heat from, see, right now.
Mm-hmm. That must have been, you must have had some pretty cold times this past winter.
Last winter, it was. But I don't get cold. I sleep in there. See, that's my bed. I sleep in there, and I have three rooms closed off, two rooms closed off that I don't use because that way it makes it more warmer in here. See, I got it shut off. You can see where I got it blocked off in there.
Sure.
I asked Virginia O'Neill if one of her sons, she has two, the one in North Carolina and one in Colorado, hadn't asked her to come and live with one of them. She said they both wanted to have her move in and that she was thinking about it. But she says, you know, when you live with other people, you have to do things the way they want you to. And she said that she liked being as independent as she could be. Perhaps poverty is most keenly felt in the black community. According to a report by the Champaign County Urban League, while the general level of poverty declined in the county over the last 10 years, the level for black families went up 0.1%, now standing at 24.5%. Of the black families in poverty, 74% are headed by women. It was to help these families that a place called Matthew House 18 was founded. Matthew House 18 sits on the fringe of that area of Northeast Champaign known as the North Side, or the North End. Nearly a third of the city's black population lives there. It is 97% black. The house was established about a year and a half ago to help feed, clothe, and counsel the children of single mothers living in the North End. I visited there one day at dinner time to talk with the founder of Matthew House 18 and walked into a scene of complete chaos. It looked kind of like a war with all the combatants under 4 feet. I was directed to the kitchen, and there I find Tamara, tall and blonde, dressed in jeans and a gray sweatshirt. She looked like a slightly older than average college student. She does have a rather military bearing. Perhaps you need that when you live in the eye of this kind of low-level hurricane. But that stiffness quickly dissolves when she takes a small child onto her lap. She seems intentionally vague about her background and intentionally very low-key about what she has started, as if talking about it too much might cause it to lose some of the spirit of neighbor helping neighbor that she values so highly. She explains that Matthew House 18 was named for the 18th chapter of the book of Matthew, one that speaks of God's love for children. When I asked Tamara if she was the founder of Matthew House, she replied with an almost apologetic laugh that God was the founder, that he called her to the task of helping children. And she says there are many children in need.
Well, we deal with the children of single mothers on public aid. That's the group we focus on. There just isn't enough money for the mothers to make it through the month. There isn't enough food stamps, and there just isn't enough money to go around. So we give them support by providing free meals and by providing clothing and a lot of guidance, because the children get pretty angry at being poor and black, which is still a lot of prejudice against them. It's kind of like a real handicap, like a paraplegic person or blind person, except they're not as accepted. So we help them deal with it so they won't be so angry when they go to school and see what other children have. And that's pretty much the idea, to give them a chance to break out of that poverty cycle. They're all like third generation public aid people.
Do you usually have the same children all the time, or do you always have different ones? Is it always kind of changing, or?
No, we try to keep a group. Right now we have a group of 40 that we do one-on-one work with. We see them at least 3 times a week for at least 4 hours each time, so that's a lot of time. But that's the best way we can do it. We have a lot of volunteers, and you could see that when you came in.
How many children do you feed in a week, do you know?
An average of 20 a day just for meals. That doesn't include snacks or food that we give out.
As people have found out about your being here, have there been more children or more people coming to you?
Well, we keep it pretty low key. We have a waiting list, and we're going to open a Matthew House over in Birch Village, and we expect to have about 100 children that we will have to take turns there, because the need is just real, real big. So we'll only see them once a week there and take care of their needs first, like food. If we could have like 5 houses and cover 200 or 250 people, we'd make a real big dent into this north side of Champaign, and we're hoping to by going to Birch Village. And that isn't, you know, that's just our first new Matthew House. We'll have more, hopefully.
It's an awfully big undertaking, you see.
Not really. Well, I would have never started it if I would have known it was supposed to be that big. But it started with just me. Now we have 52 volunteers. And a great big van. People gave money and bought a van, and somebody actually bought the house for us. So we own the house. It's just a lot of caring people, but they just didn't know, because children aren't going to go running around and discussing it. They have some pride about it. They'd rather be hungry than go out and advertise it. So you have to just live right here and have people really accept you and just be a neighbor and help, you know, without being an agency. I think they would not come if we were an agency. It is no kidding. I know it sounds real stupid and far out and crazy, but truly, when I was in a crisis, I had to confront a government agency on some things I thought they did wrong. So I lost my grant and I went pretty much broke. And I was very bitter. And I've never been a real Christian anyway. I've looked in all kinds of religions. And I started reading the Bible, which meant nothing to me, until it just kept drawing me back to that Matthew chapter 18. And I felt in my heart, real hard, I was being called to go into the neighborhoods and help the children. And I didn't want it. There's no way. I mean, I have no idea. I'm a white woman. I'm not going to live in a real poor black neighborhood and be poor. There was no way. and I could not turn my back on it. It was so strong, and I didn't know how to do it in the first place. I mean, you have a feeling, you have to go and help the children. So what am I going to do? You know, I can help 10 children or what? It was foolish. But I did come because the feeling was so strong. And a friend of mine, Father Royer at St. Mary's, told me to just do listening prayer, which I'd never done before, which is like meditation. I did. And through that, I learned what was needed here. And the children started to come, and people stopped hitting me and trying to burn the house down and all this wild stuff. Because I just stayed and stayed and stayed, and I cleaned up roaches and rats and worked as a cleaning lady at first until, and then people heard about it, and kids started coming, and mothers told me what they needed. And out of that, it is not my idea at all, I'm just the middle person. It's the neighborhood came to me when they knew I was there to hear and care, and brought me their needs, and out of their needs grew Matthew House. I did not come here with an idea, hey, here I am, people, you know, I didn't know. And I just learned, and they told me, so we're doing it together. Filling a need. And then a lot of people who have more in Champaign-Urbana are giving to the people who don't. And it seems like a real normal thing to do. It's just that it takes a middle person, I think, sometimes. And that's all I am. So that's it. Well, listen, I'm going to go.
Tamara lives in the house with her 10-year-old daughter. They each have a room, and they survive, as does the house, on the donations and the goodwill of others. While at Matthew House, I talked with one of Tamara's volunteers, a 19-year-old named Charles, who says he does the work because it's fun. He was introduced to Tamara, he says, by his little brother.
It's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place. A lot of kids, most of them, they be out. When they be over here, they run around and play, and there's something they can't do around their own house. They come here, they feel at home. That's the most that I can really say about it.
Does this really help with feeding them? Like, would they be able to eat as well at home? I mean, do you think their folks are really have a hard time feeding them?
Well, some families are, and some of them, you know, they manage and so far. But until we can help them, we help them. We do the best we can.
Not everyone can find his or her way to Matthew House or Empty Tomb or any of the other agencies in town. Many people either don't know where to go or can't bring themselves to ask for the help they need. No one really knows how many of these people there may be, but it seems certain that agencies in town are seeing more and more people who say they have never had to ask for help before. Marion Phillippe is an outreach worker at the Information and Referral Services office. She says that in the past few months, she's talked to a number of people who seemed badly in need of food, but who couldn't bring themselves to come in and get it.
A lady called late one afternoon and was very upset and very hesitant to talk, and she said she was out of food. She had several children, and she had just been recently unemployed for the first time in her life, and she was so humiliated that she could not, it took all of her courage just to call on the phone. And I said, yes, we could assist her with food today. Even if she would walk in, we could give her some things. And she said, where is your office located? And I told her, she says, I mean, where is your office located in the building? And I said, downstairs. She wanted to know, where do I come in? I said, do you come in the front door? She says, I can't do that because I know a lot of people in the community, and I probably would run into somebody that I know, and I would never be able for them to know that I had to come down here and ask for food. And I said, well, maybe if you come, you know, nobody in this agency ever talks about the people who come through. She says, I don't even think I could do that. She said, I think that, I said, well, you see if you can't try, and we'll find a way, you know, maybe to help you without people knowing what you're there for. And she never showed up.
That's Marion Phillippe of Family Service of Champaign County. Dan Easton is the warehouse manager for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. I met him when I went there for an interview. He's been through some very tough times in the past couple of years, including some serious health problems, a divorce, and some time spent in prison. He says that he was one of those people who either could not or would not ask for help when he needed it.
I was raised in a time when the thing was that you didn't ask anybody for anything. You earned it, and rightly so. But that pride thing, I don't know, a false sense of pride, dignity, or whatever. person wants to call it, name it, it's there. And for a long time, I wouldn't ask people. I would do without. And one, I didn't know where to go, what to do, as far as asking anybody, but, you know, if it meant working two jobs, three jobs, whatever it meant, until you dropped. That was the era that I was raised in, or at least that was the type of atmosphere that I was raised in. I grew up, and as I grew up, went in service and came back out. I was married and raised a small family, but at that time, yeah, well, I made $52.50 a week, you know, but I could raise a small family. I had a place to live. It wasn't the best, but a place to live, and I could buy groceries, but groceries were a lot less, you know, what they are today to deal with. But still, there was times where I did without, and I allowed my kids to do without because I did not know where to go or who to see. And that in itself was wrong, at least for me. And that's my opinion. That's my personal opinion on that.
I want to leave you with the most encouraging success story that I heard in preparing this program. Of course, Family Service and Empty Tomb and Matthew House are all success stories, but they probably wouldn't be able to help as many people as they do without the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. The food bank, located in Champaign, is part of a nationwide network of nonprofit organizations that collect food and sometimes other products donated by major manufacturers and make them available at a very small cost to churches and social service groups.
They have to be approved. The only criterion for approval is that they be a nonprofit agency that either has a pantry or an on-site feeding program.
Jennifer Finch is managing director of the food bank.
I would say we run about 75% pantries. Some of those also have on-site feeding programs, and then we do have a number of things like daycare centers or elementary school breakfast programs, shelters, things like that that are on-site feeders. All they have to do is get that approval, and then they are able to draw. As soon as we register them with us as a nonprofit agency, they may draw food.
Food bank members can buy anything the food bank has, and there is a wide variety of food products for 12 cents a pound. Finch says the food bank gets most of its food through Second Harvest, a national network of food banks.
And they have a lot of corporations that they have contact with. Quaker, Pillsbury, Purina, M&M Mars, gosh, I can't think of all of them, but Kraft, lots of them. And the way it works is that whenever any of those agencies, or corporations rather, produces food that's edible but unmarketable, is the way they classify it, it's usually cosmetic. It can be anything at all from a wrong label. Then we'll just get little correction slips and be asked to attach those to the case. They cannot put it on the shelves, but it's good food. Sometimes it's close to the store's pull date, which means that it's close to out of code. However, that's just for retail purposes, and the food is still good for anywhere from up to 6 months to 2 years after that. And before this, it was just dumped, and it's as cheap for them to give it to us as it is to dump it, is the way that they figure it. Plus, it gives them a tax break because they are donating to a charity. So we get that food.
The Eastern Illinois Food Bank is really just a large warehouse, a satellite of the Central Illinois Food Bank, which is located in Springfield. There are just two regular employees, Jennifer Finch and the warehouse manager you heard earlier, Dan Easton. But with the aid of many volunteers, the food bank is about to close its first fiscal year with an average monthly distribution of 90,000 pounds of food. That volume, says Jennifer Finch, reflects the great need for food.
The need has really, in a way, been brushed under the carpet. The hunger report that was put out suggested that due to increasing employment, there was decreasing hunger, but two things dispute that. First of all, increasing employment isn't very accurate. It means it's simply they're going by the figures that there are less people on the unemployment rolls. However, that doesn't account for the people who've lost their benefits. And recently a study was made by Impact in Illinois, which said that out of some 180,000 people who had gone off the unemployment rolls because they could no longer get benefits, only some 60,000 of those had actually received jobs. So you're talking about two-thirds, or 120,000, who now have nothing but welfare to fall back on. And many times there's a delay with the welfare process. Sometimes it just doesn't make ends meet, and that's where we try to come in. Mm-hmm.
And the organizations that have been buying food from you, what kind of things do they say about demands upon them?
That they've increased steadily. The most depressing thing I find there is the type of person who's going in is not the chronic sort of streetwise welfare person who really is government supported and knows how to handle the government benefits. These are people who are real novices, and they don't know what their benefits are. They don't even know that they should be getting things. And they're people who have been employed all their lives and who have always been middle class and are now being literally forced to admit that they can't handle their budget. And it's not for lack of trying. That's what's so depressing. It's really not for lack of trying.
We are not going to spend a lot of time summing up here. If there is one theme to this program, it is that people reaching out to help others in need can make a difference. Perhaps the one person who puts it best is Tamara of Matthew House 18.
Something that's what we've forgotten to do is we always say, well, I can't make any difference in this world. Let so-and-so handle it, or this agency. Yes, you can, just as a person. And we've forgotten how to do that. And that's how this country was built. And I'm not even an American. By just the pioneers doing for each other, and we're not doing it anymore. So what we're doing is just take people, most of them are Christians, who want to just help their neighbor without any big formal things, and that's how we do it. So, hey, we see a need, and we're going to do it. That's all.
For WYLL Radio, this is David Inge.